For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy... All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Before we start, there is like this developer myth, and I'm going to ask you about it. Apparently, someone said that you wrote ASP.NET on a napkin in an airplane. So here's the question. Was Chuck Norris sitting next to you the whole time?
No.
Oh, it was just you? So you come from a strong developer background.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I helped kind of create sort of the .NET project. There was a number of us that kind of came together back then. And so my contribution was working on the ASP.NET side. And so we had a team of a couple people. But I helped write some of the original, sort of wrote the original prototype, I guess, of ASP.NET. And then led the team, and then later helped write the original prototype actually for ASP.NET MVC. And kind of had a long developer history and been running Azure the last couple of years, and now run the whole cloud enterprise group, including .NET and ASP.NET and Visual Studio and SQL and all those other good things.
That's really cool because, I mean, obviously I grew up as a developer. I remember using ASP.NET the first time. I remember using .NET the first time and coming off of VB6. How has your experience as a developer influenced the stuff that we're doing in Azure?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, I think one of the things about the cloud in particular is, you know, in many ways it's an environment that lets developers do a whole bunch more. Uh-huh. And so a lot of the, you know, obviously there's differences between building, you know, a class library and building a cloud, but, you know, a lot of the characteristics around, you know, how do you make something approachable, how do you make something understandable, and then also, you know, how do you kind of enable developers to architect solutions and build them with continuous agility? You know, a lot of those things, you know, core characteristics are pretty common across any type of developer technology. And, you know, that's something that we've tried to really incorporate as part of Azure.
So what are some of the key things that when you took over for the cloud, you're thinking, okay, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, because we got to get developers to buy in. What are some of the things that you thought about that have been implemented?
Well, you know, one of the things that we did, and ironically, I think it was like week 5 that I was on the job on Azure, was actually bring everyone, all the senior leaders together and do a hackathon for 2 days. And we just said, let's use the product. And, you know, got everyone in a conference room, or it was actually, we rented out a ballroom because there was 60 or 50 people. And basically, we even bought a credit card for each of the attendees, you know, a little Safeway $20 credit card, and said, sign up and use the product. And, you know, it was eye-opening. This was many years ago. And, people struggled to sign up. It was like, gosh, okay, how do I download the SDK? How do I build something? The docs aren't very good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we try to use that as a, let's be hands-on with the product and really use the product and learn from it. And, you know, our first sort of 6-month sprint that we did was really just, let's simplify the website, the sign-up, the documentation, the samples, the SDKs. And then, you know, how do we rinse and repeat that and do that over and over again in terms of trying to make things both approachable, comprehensible, and then, you know, really enable developers to be successful with it. You know, over time we've tried to take that same approach of, you know, let's take the friction out of the system with things like deployment. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a great service called Azure App Service that lets you host web and mobile backends, not just for .NET, but for Java and PHP and Node and Python and other languages. You know, how do we enable you to deploy and have an app live in a few seconds? How can you integrate that with a continuous integration or a continuous deployment pipeline from Visual Studio Online or GitHub or Mercurial or Bitbucket? Mm-hmm. You know, how can you integrate diagnostics, continuous integration in the whole nine yards, and really build a kind of professional deployment environment? You know, that would be another example of improvements and, you know, thousands more. But, you know, we're trying to take those same learnings and just continually work with people using the product, learn from it, and then be very agile in terms of just keep making it better and better.
That's awesome. So the path to success for developer, at least for me, is getting something up and working fast.
Yep.
And it seems like for .NET, we've done that, but now we've expanded that to a whole bunch of other things. What's the thinking behind that?
Well, I think it's just core for developers, which is if you can make stuff easy, people will do it. Mm-hmm. And if it's hard, they won't. You know, you can't stop it just being easy. You got to obviously make it complete and make it performant and secure and all that stuff. But it's, you know, definitely the faster path to value or the faster path to wow, if you can make that happen in 30 seconds or 5 minutes or something that's measured in a short amount of time, you know, you're much more likely to have someone say, okay, now I want to go even deeper. And so, you know, even today in the keynote that I gave at Dev Intersections, you know, demos that I showed were, let's create a database from scratch. You know, I sort of asked the audience, how many people here have, you know, deployed a SQL database? Lots of hands go up. You know, how many people can do it in a day? A lot of hands go down.
Yeah.
You know, how many people would do it in a week? You know, a lot of people take a week or a month. You know, let's do it, and let's do it in 60 seconds. And you get people go, wow, that's pretty fast. You know, let's do GDPR and do failover of that database to another region thousands of miles away. You know, I think of the 1,500 people in the audience, I think three people had ever done that before. And we did it live on stage in 60 seconds.
That's amazing.
You know, we built a web app and deployed it and made updates. We hooked up continuous integration. We created a data warehouse. We created a Power BI, BI front end against the data warehouse. You know, and able to do all that, you know, in minutes, you know, I think spurs people to say, I'm going to try that out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can get to value in minutes, you're going to keep going and you'll keep finding more and more value as you go.
Absolutely. So you mentioned a lot of other stuff. Usually when people think of the cloud, they're thinking, I'm going to put my web stuff up there. But now it feels like for developers in particular, there's tons of other cloud type mm-hmm. things that they can do and should do on the cloud. What are some of those things?
Yeah, we have across Azure now probably, I've lost track, probably 70 or 80 new services. And so, you know, we obviously have the ability to spin up VMs, which is still a core part of what people do. But increasingly we're seeing people that say, gosh, you know what? If you can provide it as a service that I can consume, that is a much easier, more approachable way for me to use something than have to run it in my own VM and do the care and feeding of the VM myself. And so, you know, we've got databases as a service. We have Redis caches as a service. We have NoSQL document stores as a service. We've got Hadoop as a service, data warehouse as a service, you know, and literally like 70 others of those things. So, you know, whether it's with data, whether it's with applications, whether it's with developer services, whether it's with IoT and Internet of Things, whether it's with machine learning, and then obviously whether it's with infrastructure, you know, we've got a really rich set of offerings that really enable people to do some powerful stuff.
Awesome. Let's move over to the data stuff.
Yep.
Because I think nowadays we're finding that probably the least used commodity of almost any organization is the amount of data they have, yep. and they're not really doing anything with it. What are some things that we do in the cloud to help with that, to help them understand and use their data?
Well, I think, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of developers, you know, I confess myself until a couple of years ago, you know, when I thought about databases, it was in a very transactional way. Mm-hmm. You know, you write records, you read records, and it's, you know, forms over data or it's, you know, basic reports. And, you know, a lot of custom database apps that we write as .NET developers using Visual Studio are that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the world, though, the last couple of years is starting to move on in a pretty dramatic way mm-hmm. and say, gosh, you know, all that data that's being stored, there's so much richness in there. How do you get the insight from that raw transactional data and be able to understand, you know, not only what happened and why did it happen, but be able to understand what will happen and, more importantly, what should I do?
Right.
And that journey, I think, is an important one. And I'd say most organizations are still probably focused on what happened and why did it happen. And I think we're on the cusp of moving much more in terms of what will happen and what should I do and how do I take action based on that. And that'll be something that I think as developers, we all have big opportunity to contribute towards over the next couple of years. And so, for example, you know, one of the database services I showed on stage is our SQL Data Warehouse service. You can spin it up in literally 2 minutes. You can pull data from any database. So we have great built-in hooks from SQL, but you can pull it from Oracle or DB2 or from a mainframe or from your SAP system or from, you know, a SaaS app like Dynamics or Salesforce. And you can pull in the data. You can do it in a recurring job, because one of the things with data management, you don't want to manually do anything. You want to set up a job and get alerts if things go wrong. Mm-hmm. And if you think about your transactional systems today, if you start exporting the data into a data warehouse, you can actually see the history of the transaction. So not just how many items are on order for this particular widget, but you know, what did it look like yesterday, last week, last month, last year, and be able to look at aggregate queries that can actually tell you over time what's happening and be able to use time as a dimension to really understand intent in a much richer way. And that really lets you start to do things like also machine learning,
right,
where you can sort of say, gosh, when the product is this, or you know, when a customer buys this and this, what else in their shopping cart should we recommend that they might also like to buy based on, you know, thousands of other people that have checked out things. And you know, we've worked with customers where we've increased, you know, shopping cart conversion rates by, you know, 30 to 40% just by sprinkling in a little machine learning using our machine learning service on top of a data warehouse, pulling from a database they already have.
And we're talking about, like, all organizations have data, and we're talking about the shopping cart one, which is the canonical one, but cows. I mean, I've heard this from Joseph Sirosh about cows.
Yeah.
We saw it in your keynote today.
Yeah.
What can you do with data in cows? What was the example you told us today?
I didn't give a specific example today, but I've told the story that Joseph's done, which is called the Connected Cow. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a fun story because people are always like, what in the world is that? But it's basically, it's a company in Japan, Fujitsu, that built a solution for farmers. And you put a pedometer around the calf's or a cow's leg and you count steps. And it goes to a, you know, a Wi-Fi terminal that beams it up to the cloud. And then the farmer just has a cell phone app. And it will tell the farmer when a cow is sick, because it turns out when a cow's steps change dramatically, it's often a sign of illness. And so it can say, cow 1, 2, 3, you should go have a vet check, take care of, which ultimately optimizes, you know, the health and avoids death of your cow farm, I guess. Or and then also, it can even calculate when a cow is in heat and is ready to reproduce. And basically, you know, most cattle production now is done with artificial insemination. So if the farmer knows cow 1, 2, 3, this is the optimum period to do artificial insemination on, they can basically increase their cow yield by about 40 to 60%.
I think this goes to a larger sort of thing of the IoT kind of space and what we can do in Azure. Because it feels very IoT-ish to put a little device on a cow.
Yeah.
What are some other things that people are doing with IoT that Azure helps with?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty about all these things, whether it's with cows or whether it's with, you know, Rockwell Automation's doing it with gas dispensers and petrol stations, Ford is adding IoT sensors into all their cars and uploading it into the cloud, and then to kind of optimize the car owning experience and the servicing experience. And, you know, ThyssenKrupp is doing it with elevators. They've got IoT sensors in a million elevators. All this data is being beamed to Azure. And, you know, regardless of whether it's cows, elevators, cars, you know, if you can look at that data in real time as it's coming in, do that same type of machine learning heuristics, you can then basically build apps that can get 10 times smarter and can tell the farmer the cow is ready for reproduction, the car needs servicing, the elevator is gonna break down, you know, the gas dispenser, you know, is over consuming in terms of its power maintenance. And, you know, those types of kind of capabilities really just make a whole bunch of scenarios that you'd never think of as a software, or most software developers would never think of, 10 times richer. And the beauty about IoT is, as sensors get cheaper and cheaper, everything we have here is gonna have an IoT sensor. This camera that's recording us will have an IoT sensor in 2 or 3 years. Because you're going to want to know, is the camera quality right, you know, and get alerts before the end of the interview as to whether or not the thing isn't working. You're going to want to know in your light bulb, when is it going to burn out? And you know, that ability to take all that data, use the cloud to really understand it, and then build web and mobile apps around it that can actually drive intelligent action and outcomes based on it, really just makes developers 10 times more valuable. And then also will just change our life in a pretty amazing way in terms of just our day-to-day experiences.
And this goes for just not ThyssenKrupp or the larger, but any small organization can hook a $40 device onto pretty much anything, but the amount of data that they'll produce is so large, the cloud will be able to help with that, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, what we typically see with a lot of IoT scenarios is often we call it kind of a hot path scenario and a cold path scenario. Mm-hmm. And so you want to be able to kind of in a hot path scenario stream, you know, data. It could be HTTP messages with JSON payloads, or it can be any protocol. We support a wide variety of ones to the cloud. And you want to be able to tell, you know, pretty much in real time mm-hmm. or near real time something is going wrong. And so we've got a bunch of services with Azure, like our Stream Analytics service, Stream Insights, which basically lets you look at, you know, temporal data. You can say the last 60-second window, are we seeing a whole bunch of anomalies based on the previous couple minutes of activity, and fire an alert. And you know, with machine learning, it's not like artificial intelligence in the same way of, you know, it'll automatically tell you what to do. You know, it's mostly you're effectively creating data models based on historical data, and you're effectively detecting anomalies, or you'll be able to predict based on those models as you get new data whether this is consistent or not and what action to take. And so, you know, typically what someone that would do for the elevator or the car scenario is just take training data of, you know, what it was a couple months or a couple hours or a couple days worth of previous historical data, create a model based on it, and then you can just stream that data to the cloud in Azure, and we'll tell you when the data is consistent or when it looks anomalous. And that's kind of a hot path activity, and you can then drive logic. And then we have what's called a cold path model, where you don't want to throw away your data. You want to collect that data from all that sensors, save it forever, and then you can do kind of batch jobs in the background and be able to ask probing questions and use that data also to train more data for your new data models that you can optimize for your hot path. That's a super, super common scenario. That's easy to set up. I mean, literally, you can build a simple IoT workload on Azure in an hour or two. And then the nice thing is you can continually tune it and make it even more valuable. And it literally applies to every problem domain, every industry.
This is awesome. So let's shift gears a little bit. Traditionally, developers like ourselves would just throw code over the wall, and then the IT person would take over and do that. But it feels nowadays that the developer has much more of a role in getting these things deployed. The term DevOps obviously comes to mind. What are some things that Azure helps in that regard with DevOps?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple things. I mean, DevOps is a bit of a word that's a little bit overloaded. It means something different to everyone. And, you know, it's probably a little bit like the agile push that we've had in years past. You know, there's a spectrum. And, you know, some people interpret DevOps or agile meaning in a pure sense. And the reality is there's this wide spectrum before you get to purity. And, you know, there's lots of gradients of goodness that you can get along the way to continuously improve. And, you know, a lot of what DevOps is around is just taking Agile to the next level in some ways. It's the way I interpret it. And I'm sure someone would disagree with that. But and so what we're trying to do with Azure, you know, first and foremost, is how do you have a very Agile work environment? And how can you set up continuous integration, continuous delivery, and have it so that you can have a team of developers, every time someone checks in code, you spin up a build, you run a whole bunch of tests. If, you know, the code can't complete, you know, they can't check in unless the test pass. And then, you know, how can you go one step further and say, not only are we going to run functional tests, let's do load testing. You know, let's actually stick it in a staging slot in our cloud production environment and really, you know, ensure that it's ready, all in a completely automated way. And then basically either automatically or have someone in a release management tool say, yep, it passes, go. Flip it into production and then be able to take analytics from that production workflow, or, you know, the production deployment of how are people using it? What is the real performance? What exceptions are we seeing? You know, what are the issues that we're identifying? Feed that back to the developer and have them rinse and repeat as quickly as possible. How do you enable that? And whether or not you have IT pros do some of it, whether developers do all of it, whether you have a separate operations team, you know, those will be different in different teams and different people have different opinions. But enabling that flow to be, you know, that you can turn the cycle time as fast as possible is a key part of what we're trying to do with Azure. And so as an example, we have with Visual Studio Online, great support for source control management with Git. As well as TFS. We now have build server support where we'll actually kick off builds for you in the cloud, whether they're .NET builds with MS Build or Java build with Maven and Ant or Node builds with NPM integrated. You can integrate all those different experiences across any language we'll run your unit tests. We have full kind of workflow support, so we can automatically kind of, you know, notify you if a test failed and why and how you can fix it. We have the built-in load testing. We can simulate 250,000 users hitting your app.
Wow.
And give you real-time data in a completely automated way on each check-in. And then we have, with our Azure App Service, which is great for hosting web and mobile apps, a really nice way that you can deploy into what's called a slot or a deployment slot that only you can access. So you can do final testing and then automatically flip it into production and know that you can roll back to the previous known state good if once you go live, you're suddenly seeing something unexpected.
Right.
You can automate all that yourself in minutes. And you now suddenly have a, you know, a pretty good agile environment in which to work in that can, again, allow you to kind of keep lowering the cycle time and works great in a team environment.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the new hotness. Obviously, containerization.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, we're kind of new cutting edge in containerization for everyone.
Yep.
What are we doing in that space?
We have a service that we're launching on Azure called the Azure Container Service. And it basically, we're doing lots of stuff with Docker, period. And so you can, you know, we've got VM hosting for Docker. We've added Docker, we're adding Docker support and the Notion containers directly into Windows Server 2016, which comes out in a few months. And so, you know, we're deeply embracing containers. With our container service on Azure then, we're also building a service that basically lets you orchestrate containers, which we kind of think of as the next level, which means not only can I use containers, but I can now deploy an app that's made up of potentially thousands of microservices that are all deployed as containers and orchestrate that and deploy it and manage it across multiple servers and VMs across the data center. And so that's a service that we're building. We're partnering with folks like Docker and Mesosphere and others so that you can actually use some of the most popular orchestration frameworks for containers with our container service and provide built-in support for it. And you can basically scale and manage it however you want. And so it's a pretty powerful set of options. And I think in the same way with our Azure App Service, we've made it really easy for web and mobile apps. We're really looking to use the Azure Container Service and make it super powerful for container-based apps as well.
That's awesome. A lot of people have noticed that Microsoft feels like it's shifting or changing. And part of that is our embrace of OSS. What are we doing in that space?
Well, we're doing lots. I mean, I think, you know, especially the last couple of years, but maybe I'd say in the last year in particular, you know, we've pivoted to kind of embrace open source by default in many ways, especially in the developer space. Whether it's, you know, supporting things like Docker and other things that were built by the community, and how do we integrate those more deeply into our products and really embrace and use them as core fundamentals. And then also taking our existing libraries in code, like .NET and ASP.NET, and how do we make them available under open source. That's, you know, a key change that we've also made the last couple of years, and it, you know, really allows us to have very collaborative engagements with, you know, a wide variety of developers. You know, not just ones in our ecosystem, but, you know, if you look at what AngularJS is doing around TypeScript, you know, you've got Google and Microsoft that are best buds in the JavaScript world now, you know, working on these efforts together. And, you know, I think a lot of people would find that 5 years ago, very surprising.
Right.
And you know, it's great to see, and I think at the end of the day, all developers win when we do this.
So just to finish up, you've been to almost all of the Dev Intersection, Dev Connection.
Yep.
Tell me about Dev Intersection, why you like coming so much.
I think this is the 15th year that I've done either Dev Connections or Dev Intersections, and I usually do it two times a year.
Right.
So I think I'm probably up to the 30th one that I've done. You know, it's a great conference in the sense of, I think there's more than 1,500 people here this week. And, you know, it's nice because it's, people are, have a lot of connections, but there's, you know, there's DBAs, there's developers, there's some IT pro, you know, there's, there's cloud folks. There's a nice intersection of different interests and talents. And, you know, a lot of people can basically buy a pass and go to all the different talks.
Right.
And so it's a great way to learn new things in a pretty flexible way. And really experiment and learn. And then it's just, you know, really great speakers, really great content, and, you know, pretty jam-packed set of days of really good training.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I know you're busy.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Again, we're here in Las Vegas at Dev Intersection. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thanks.